we're waiting for one person to return with some information. So we'll be looking at the minutes, making any notes, about 5 minutes at the most, one at least.
I thought when I said that, white people in general were insensitive, and that the defensive, well, in essence, they had to be desensitized all over, so they wouldn't impose their prejudices on the children, which would then have to go through this again when they became teachers.
All right, let's see, how does it? You don't see that stated anywhere, right?
Oh, page six. Right. Well,
the bottom.
I agree. I said that the feeling that I had was that white teachers in white schools were insensitive. That's why some of these kids picked up prejudices anyway. And how could you desensitize some teachers that might be transferred to someplace else? I mean, I would think it would have to be something, a blanket thing for all teachers. So children could be free of that.
Yes. All right. Would you make a note as we make a note of your statement as you want it, with the kids getting it, and then give it to the committee or send it to Mary.
Fine.
And of course, the tapes are the official minutes, but we will make that and attach it to the minutes next time so that we at least have what you wanted said correctly. There we go.
Mr. Chairman, on page 8, I mean, down, it seems to me that, it is invalid. Well, I don't like to use this word. If there is any possibility that, Mr. Rindon could, give us a breakdown someday, maybe perhaps we just only exploring some kind of idea how to break down, the Oriental. According to our discussion, the Spanish surname, which meaning that some of the Oriental is in there in that category. Well, there is a possibility that we could get some kind of breakdown, in regards to that. But I don't like to use invalids. Perhaps maybe it seems to me they don't agree with their precision of the wording.
All right, you're speaking of the having all of the ones that we said before on the chart on the Spanish surname.
Right.
All right, we'll take that as an idea to try to continue to break down today then.
Yeah.
As opposed to the minutes which simply gave what he presented.
It is possible. Thank you.
Any other?
Well, can you add to that too? The Mexicans got the Anglo-American surname too?
Yeah. I think we'll just refer to over here on the first page. Oh, is it first page? No, it's not first page. We've indicated in here that we've talked about it once before and would have to. What page? Page 8? Page 8 also.
Both the schools in your district, which are predominantly Mexican American, produce the lesser product. Is it,
Yes, it's on that same page. I recall at the, who was that?
American America produces an awful bit.
At the,
We don't want to negotiate on the hands with
page 8 there. Mr. Wong felt the use of Spanish surnames and identifying and so forth. Next to that last paragraph. We'll still take that up and eventually clarify. Any other? Yes?
Well, I was going to say because some black people with Spanish surnames too.
Shall we make our own method of recommending to Washington for the sins of
taking?
Any other comments, corrections, or notations? All right, before we begin, may I make a couple of statements, one announcement? Well, to get the announcement out of the way, I suppose, first. About 3 months ago, we took up the problem of parking and validating the parking tickets. And since that time, the city has almost gone bankrupt with parking ticket validation. Since, until recently, we had goals for people simply because they were attending this meeting to come up and have that ticket validated or go on through one of the departments. We had to do something about it. So, except for those that are invited, though they are not on our official dialoguing list, those that are invited, of course, will have theirs validated. But in addition to those invited, the regular dialoguers will have their tickets validated. That means that many want to know then, who are the official dialoguers? And we'll go through that. But of course, if you're an official dialoguer, you're likely to know it, or the other way around. We have a list here that we'll have to start using as those that are officially invited. And I suppose the best way to do it would be to wait till near the end of the session and read it off at that point. But I'm going to let Mary tell you the mechanics of how we're going to do it. Mary? Okay, the mechanics of how we want to do this. Let the official dialogue has come up and have the.
Now, Vera has the parking stamps and is prepared to give them out to the official dialoguers. All I can say is that we have been getting large scale reactions because we just ran out of parking stamps last time. Everyone who attended came up for parking stamps, and we would hope that this would not be the case in the because it's really running
$35
a meeting.
All right, maybe the most expeditious way to do it is read the groups that are officially at this time representative of the dialogue, officially. City of San Diego, that goes without saying. That includes the city attorney, the city council, the managers, all of those. Yeah, County of San Diego, Mayor's Office, Mayor's Council on Youth Opportunity, Police Department, Recreation Department, District Attorney. We're still way up in the file jet. County of San Diego, Probation Department, Sheriff's Department, Department of Public Welfare, San Diego Unified School District, that is Dr. Baylor, George Hall, Dr. McJunkin. And I don't think Phil is here. Sweetwater, while they are guests, they would have their Board of Education members, Southeast Adult School, the news media don't have any problem, The Voice, organization, Asiatic American Center, California Employment Office, Economic Opportunity Commission, Jack Katz, Educational Opportunity Program, Brett Rivas, Greater Parish Ministry, Reverend Hamburger, League of Women Voters, Mrs. Abby, or Destiny, Legal Aid Society, Charles Lynch, or
this is a real
here. Linda Vista Service Center, that's French Size, American Youth Association, NAACP, National Alliance of Businessmen, Neighborhood House, Neighborhood Youth Corps, Port of San Diego, San Diego Inc., San Diego Black Conference, San Diego Chamber of Commerce, Merit Management Council, Health Help Through Neighborhood Leadership, State Service Center, Urban Coalition, Mr. McKinnon, or Mr. Quirk, Reverend George Smith, Urban League, U.S. Attorney's Office, School of Social Work, San Diego College, individuals. I see some here, so I'll just read those. Mr. Castellick, Judge Lindley, Reverend Oxley, Reverend James, Mrs. Salk, Mrs. Slaughter, Reverend Fitzgable, Reverend Walter, and the CACs at this time represented by Mr. Charles Ballard, Mr. Don Logan, and Mike Emmerich. Yes.
Carol, may I request official status publicly for the first time since COVID just formed June the 1st officially for community opportunity programs and education?
Yeah, I've already written that up to submit, as I mentioned, to the Central Committee.
I was supposed to represent Impact.
An Impact? I didn't mention Impact, you know. What happened to the committee? I didn't miss the Impact, okay. Yes. And Mac.
That was mentioned.
I mentioned Mac.
No, you didn't.
The senator it is. I thought I mentioned the senator.
It's Linda Vista.
They call it the Mexican American Youth Association, MAYA. Could have been MAC on there as well. Estelle, would you take a note, please, about the MAC and Impact?
What do you want me to do?
Susie, I mean. Sorry. two other people asked this morning about becoming official members. They will be referred to the interim committee because we have gone through that many times about allowing the committee to look over the additional members so that we don't escalate beyond the handling capacity. Any other comments on the validation?
Well, I wonder what happens if perhaps some people couldn't afford. They can't afford a dollar, but they're coming, and we want to hear from the people that are directly involved in some of these problems, and they can't pay that type of parking fee.
We're going to take that up with the city officially, so that when they are here, and we know who they are and what they're coming for and so forth, that some provisions can be made. For we also discussed we would lose much of the spontaneity and the necessary input without some provisions. And staying here 3 hours, although that's only 20 cents an hour, sometimes we stay 4, 5, and that's a dollar. It'd be a lot of money for some people. Any other comments, questions before we move on?
You have the police department there, but so how about the fire department? Top grass and the fire department.
They have never responded. Yeah.
Or the sheriff.
The fire department was here, but they didn't respond officially. When you sent out those official invitations. All right, I think then that we should, they were on that original list, and I think we ought to make a note and recontact them. Thanks, Mike. Yes, but we send them an invitation directly.
The county sheriff's department will be on the agenda shortly, I understand. They probably ought to be officially invited.
They are.
They are.
I mentioned them.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Sheriff's Department is. They have had someone here most of the time. Any other comments at this point? All right, for now, the observation. Last week was our regular meeting date, and today, of course, ordinarily would not be, but we're here because of the urgency of this and the express desire to continue with my buddies down there. The conversation here and the importance of looking at school matters. Ordinarily, the announcements would have gone out because we have a 2-week period. The interim committee met this week and took up some other matters, which meant that many of the notices didn't go out as usual because of the time span. Thus, the absence of the mayor, city manager, and some of the others, those that ordinarily are here, their absence is accountable for by their having other engagements this week because it was not a regular scheduled meeting. We're going to work out the mechanics after this so that if a special meeting is called, or if it's moved up as it was this time, that they'll be called on personally in some way and see if they can still be here. I'm making that observation because their absence is obvious. So we'll try to tie those mechanics down when we're going to meet up the meeting. Today we're going to pick up where we left off last week with the Sweetwater School District. It isn't necessary that we back up too much in review, I don't think. I think the format, though, ought to be explained. We went over statistics last time, a lot of statistics. I really don't think they're too necessary now, and anticipation of the report. As we mentioned before, we'll hear the report, but then I urge you to get away from the statistics. I urge you to put the statistics in under the pile of material on your desk after you've heard from them, and then talk the truth of the matter and reactions and so forth. And therefore, we don't get hung up in where we were last week and the week before on numbers and statistics. I'm suggesting they have their place, and we'll have the whole report, and then we'll look at some of these other matters. Let me get his report first before any reactions, then, and go through his entire report, if I may. Let him make his entire presentation and then come back. Linda.
Thank you, Carol Wyman. We do have a report that we'll hand out, which will repeat what we gave you last time for your information and have it in your hands. And then in this same report, we have some of the reasons for the dropout, and we have dropout information separated into Spanish surname, and Negro, and Chinese, Korean, Japanese, and other non-white. And we have a number that have dropped from the day school and gone to the adult school, and what's happened to those. And I brought with me today Mr. Ward Donnelly, who is Director of Special Projects. He's in charge of our Title I program, and he spends his full time in this area. So I would like to ask Mr. Donnelly to give this complete report, and then for any questions like you suggested. So Mr. Ward Donnelly will give a report, and while he's doing that, we'll pass out some of this information to you may follow.
Well, all right. Can we pass it out then first before
right.
we start?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
These are for the training table. And those, I guess, are over there.
Keep this one.
We've got quite a number of copies. I'm not sure that there'll be one for every person. There may be a few that have to share these.
Have any extras? We have
more over here.
Got a couple more there. He has a draft here that we should have to follow. Bertrand, you wanted his there.
We brought 50 copies, so I don't know if we have more than 50 here.
We only got about 10 or so.
But they are fresh down here. We're getting
did you get one?
I'm going to
get one for the press, too, over here. Yeah.
Okay. We might quickly go over what we have here. On the first page, this is dropout information by the schools and the areas where there was an expressed concern the last time. And on the second page, you'll find the reasons by the district, that is for the total district, for dropping out of school. On page 3, we have the breakdown by the ethnic and racial groups. And then on the last page, you'll find the transfers to the adult school because we were asked to include those figures. And I might say, Mr. Wayman, that we had discussed briefly the definition of a dropout, and we're using the broadest possible definition here of anyone who leaves regular day school without graduating from high school, and this is for any reason except this is when a kid moves away from a district and you don't get a request for a transfer from another district, this is classified as a drop. If a youngster transfers to the adult school, this is considered a drop. Although these we have tagged on so as not to confuse the original figures that we gave you of 394, which is on the second page. Now, if we can just take a look at the first page for a moment. We've broken down the three high schools and the feeder junior highs by the ethnic groups, racial groups that inform as required by the state. And first of all, the Spanish surname, and we have other white, Negro, and there's a category of Chinese, Japanese, Korean, American Indian, and then other non-white, which is Filipino, Polynesian, and any Asian outside of Chinese, Korean, and Japanese. Now, in high school number 1, over to the left there, we have 31 boys and 21 girls, giving us a total of 52 that dropped out of school. Now, of the 31 boys, moving to the right, 11 were Spanish surname, 20 were other white, and then we have zeros for the rest of the columns there. Of the girls, 21, 11 were Spanish surname, 9 were other white, and then we go over to other non-white, 1. The ethnic enrollment at this school was 461 Spanish surname, and those 22 individuals constitute 4% 8 dropout. And of the other white, the 29, 1073 total enrollment, 2.7%. And of the other one other non-white that dropped from school, we have 3.8%. Then this the last column is the school enrollment of 1587, and that is a 3.3% dropout. I'll not repeat all of these figures here, but you can see high school number 2, 63 boys, 40 girls, 103 total. And of those, 45 boys and girls were Spanish surname, 704, a 6.4% dropout. Other white, 1038 total white enrollment, 5.5%. And so on across the columns there to the total enrollment of 1794 in that high school and a mean dropout rate of 5.7%. The high school number 3, 126 total, Spanish surname 47, other white 74, with a dropout rate of 8.8% for Spanish surname, 6.4% for other white. Negro is 33 1/3%. As you see, the ethnic enrollment, there were 2, and I think Mr. Rinnan explained this the last time. 1 left for employment, and the girl left to be married.
I might also comment here that this is like they're going to battle 6 times. You don't have a conclusive figure here. When you only have 6 people and 2 drop out, 33 1/3% sounds like a high percent, but you don't have a large number.
the junior highs follow here, and I don't know whether there's any interest in continuing this to go down these columns or whether to move on to the next category. I think you have the idea here. The figures are available.
Junior high would indicate there's so much less than senior high.
Well, I think that's pretty obvious as you just run your eye down there, right?
I might, instead of just reacting after the report, I might add one suggestion to you in terms of reporting it. Instead of going down there, if you wanted to simply refer to it as you make interpretations of it, maybe better than each number.
You mean interpretations regarding categories?
Or whatever interpretations you're making of the figures. I have a hunch that the figures don't mean that much to the people around as I'm watching their expressions.
Well, in regard to high school number three, for example, we briefly talked about this the last time, and factors involved here is the high mobility rate for this high school is the largest or the highest rate of transiency. That's number three, yes, sir. And also an area that has large families. There's an underemployment factor here, and I'm sure that for some of these youngsters, an inducement to go to work, this accounts for the higher dropout rate there. I would imagine in this particular area there are fewer and less stringent demands for youngsters to remain in school. This happens to be a very important factor in staying or dropping out. In this particular area, there's a higher rate of adjustment problems among youngsters, higher delinquency rate. We probably have more kids on probation and kids who have been in and out of youth authority institutions than for the other two schools.
Also, as was brought out last time, Mr. Donnelly, the other white dropout is comparable to the Spanish surname. In other words, it's all students. It's not any one area more than another. Percentage-wise, they're comparable to the other schools.
There are not great differences.
No, there's not great differences.
We thought you'd be interested in the district figures as to reasons why youngsters drop out of school. Now, these are district figures. These include everybody in this particular breakdown here. We have under marriage. You can see the boys don't marry as often at this age as the girls do. And I suppose a little sociological fact ought to creep in here that of that, those 65 marriages, I think a conservative estimate is probably at least a third of those are pregnancy exists at the time of the marriage. Employment, we had a total of 85 youngsters who left school to take employment. And I think this is partially tied in with the economic factor of the family. This other category, lack of academic success, these are the youngsters that in many respects are behavioral problems. Adjustment is another word to use. Often they're overage, they have insufficient credit, they've lost interest in school, and again, many of these are, certainly I'm not saying that all of them, but many of them are probation youngsters or youth authority parolees. I might say that we made a brief study 1 year on the number of students who returned from probation out here at Rancho del Campo and from youth authority, and their either our holding power or their staying power wasn't very good, but at any rate, they either became involved in violation of community laws or in some way were taken away from us or we lost them. And that's a large part of this lack of academic success category. And then this next area here, unsatisfactory attendance or habitual truancy resulting in academic failure. As I mentioned the last time, we have attendance services to try to keep these youngsters in school. But when they reach the age of 16, it's a very difficult matter of enforcing their attendance in school. I think the juvenile court, well, I know the juvenile court does not accept petitions from the school on a truancy petition for youngsters 16 or over. The spots in court for a parent to seek help, but cases when we have worked with parents, sometimes we're successful in getting their help in taking a case to the juvenile court, but many times they're ready to call it quits. In the area of pregnancy, we had 25, enlistment 35, and then under the, in the category of other, we had some that returned to Mexico, and we had no word back, so we call those drops. We had some that moved from the area, and sometimes this means they haven't enrolled in another school when we don't get a request for a transfer, and in other situations, they do enroll, but the school doesn't ask for it. This doesn't happen in California very often, but it does happen when kids go back to Eastern State.
You mean the leaving school does not ask for it?
No, well, the accepting school,
okay.
Receiving school,
right.
Doesn't ask.
And so if we lose track of them, it's a dropout.
Right. Yeah. Wouldn't you? That's initiated by which school?
The receiving school.
All right. So everyone understands.
Yeah. They may tell us they're going to Oklahoma, but they end up in New Jersey. But New Jersey doesn't ask for a transcript.
Right.
I might mention, Mr. Donnelly, that this 394 total is out of an enrollment of 16,835. In other words, we're talking about the total district enrollment of almost 17,000. 16,835, if I remember correctly.
Does that include elementary?
No. Just Sweetwater. The junior and senior high only.
Then on page 3, we have the breakdown by the ethnic racial groups. And without elaborating on this, we have pretty much the same categories. Our Spanish surname population is rather large, so you'll find them in all of the other categories that we had on the other page, but this is for them in particular, so that the folks who have particular interest in this area can see the reasons for leaving school. And of course, this is where those who return from Mexico show up here. And
everyone got that page?
Page 3? Up at the top, left-hand corner, page 3. And now that figure, clear over to the right there, 3.49%. This is the percent of district enrollment Spanish surname, to give you some idea of the percent of those who are Spanish surname in the district who drop out. Then in the next category, dropout information for Negroes, we've already mentioned that. One boy, one girl, Chinese, Korean, Japanese, one. That other non-white, we had two girls, and one boy, or two girls in marriage, one boy in employment, and one boy and one girl each in its non-satisfactory attendance category. Then the transfers to adult school by ethnic group. Spanish surname 10, other white 49, and so on across. And then the reasons for transfer from regular day school to adult school. Full-time employment. Marriage. Pregnancy. This was a recommendation request by a parole agent to have her gal transfer to the adult school for what she thought was better adjustment purposes. And then we always have a number of youngsters, 18, 19, and 20, who voluntarily withdraw. They're certainly beyond the compulsory age line. And there are some advantages for them to go to the adult school as far as credit is concerned. And some like a less competitive atmosphere that exists in an adult school situation. We had one for severe illness. This happened to be a girl who had cancer, and the parents had requested she be transferred to the adult school without elaborating on that. Incidentally, of these 66 that transferred over, 6 graduated in June. There were a number that dropped shortly after they got into adult school, but there were a number that were still in adult school, and I'm sure later we ran a study on it, and we find some of those graduating. Well, that's the report.
Okay. All right, Mr. Before we move on for a moment, Ms. Linda, did you want to add something to that? Or
no, I think
your officials.
The only thing I wanted to add was that I've been invited as a guest twice, and I didn't know about the parking fee, and I paid my own parking fee. And
you have on a refund.
No, and since you announced the city's almost broke, I'm not going to ask for a refund. Now, Mr. Downey's given a fine report, and he has a lot of background information he hasn't had time for, but he's gone over it very quickly, and so if you have any questions of Mr. Downey, why...
I'm sure there will be many. Okay. But before we do, let's hold off just a moment. There are many people here. Bob and George want to come on in at this point. We have some extra seats up here today if you wish. Before we react, there are many individuals here who live in the total district, the total area that's under the subject today. We also have an official group here today. The Chula Vista, City of Chula Vista, has recently formed a Human Relations Council, as put in the paper and on TV. And I'm going to ask, since they will be also reacting to this there and have a great interest in this, before we move on and get all the reactions, I'm going to introduce Mr. John Billings, and then he may in turn introduce those that are officially with him. John?
Well, I feel sort of funny here because I'm only the vice chairman, and the chairman, Mrs. Langford, is here, and I wish you'd please stand. And also present is Mrs. Tice and Mrs. Helen Allen. And we of the commission in Chula Vista are vitally interested in this, and we don't know if we'll be here at every meeting, but I'm sure it's something that we will discuss. And I'm sure we'll be discussing at great length the proceedings that go on here, since Chula Vista is so directly affected by the Sweetwater School District and the problems that exist there.
Thank you, John. Now we are ready for the reactions. We have statistics this time, statistics before. What are the reactions? Those that are here today will each be recognized, though you might not be an official dialoguer because of the whole interest in this area, and those outside of the area, feel free to get in there. Enrico first. Enrico and then...
Mr. Chairman, I would like to congratulate the Mr. Donnelly and Mr. Rendoni. It is a Michelin report to me. But one thing on page number one and number three, high school. It is a dropout percentage, 8.8. This is the thing that I don't care about the figure here. What we could do to eliminate some of this high figure, 8.08, this is mostly the Mexican and American, this dropout. Now, what we are here is to find some solution to eliminate this high point of dropout. In what way? We don't care how the figure is statistic. We know that there is statistic in regards of that. But 8.08 is a high dropout. And this is mostly Mexican and American.
Well, let me say to begin with that we accept our responsibility for educating youngsters and for keeping them in school as long as possible. But I think that Mr. Wayman said in the talk to our in-service group, what are the realities? I think we do have to take into account there are differences in areas. And that's why I directed some remarks here to this particular high school, that we have a total community here that is homogeneously economically disadvantaged. And this does make a difference. Not excusing anything here. I'm not trying to find ways out of this, but I'm saying that we have to face some harsh realities here. If you take an area that is depressed economically, as opposed to one of affluence, the youngsters have a very rich home background. There's no lack of money. They want to buy games and so forth. That's to give them skills at the early age, if the parents read books and literature to them, this makes a difference. in the ultimate product here. And I might say that we'd be kidding ourselves if we didn't take notice of the fact that a dropout is a long time of building. He doesn't decide, or something happens here in the high school to cause him to drop out. This is a long time in the making. And how much influence? I'm saying this, that to a very large extent, the home has a great influence. There are things I'm sure that we can do, and we're looking toward these, to ameliorate this problem. Because as we see it, every youngster that we get through school is an asset to the community, to the nation, and we accept that responsibility.
But let me add something here. For we might have failed in trying to set the framework. I noticed we didn't go over it last week, and maybe we should today. If I can say this as quickly as possible, we recognize that many times you will be on the spot. We recognize that. That's the value of a dialogue. But we also have a rule here that you don't have to defend. We simply pose questions, get some reactions, and keep moving so that our guests don't feel that you're here to defend in the usual sense of the word, that you're on the hot spot in the usual sense of the word. By the very definition, you may feel that. Well, what I'm saying is, don't feel that you have to respond in giving the official interpretation each time. Enjoy, relax. We're not going to get your throat for so much.
I was going to say that my explanations wouldn't be construed as defensiveness, because I'm willing to look at this whole
problem. That's what I'm trying to say. Don't feel that you have to each time, because the chair won't let you do that after a while anyway. Just relax. And there'll be some heated things coming over your way, but that's good. You'll get some dikes and some arrows, a knife now and then, but don't worry about it. We're going to put you back together, and everything's going to be all right. That's the value of this dialogue. So just relax. And I'm making notes of all those hands. I see some more coming up. Just a second. Keep them up there. Die. Yeah, you bleed, but we won't let you die. Delia, I put you down here. I got a lot of names here. Sorry, I don't know your name.
Valdez.
Thank you. Now we'll start. Finn. Yeah. Finn.
You said you were looking forward to doing some of these things with the community. Do you believe that actively now the system encourages teachers to get outside the school and try to deal with community problems, the situation that is deplorable?
Well, to give you a very blunt answer to that question, no, we don't make a concerted effort for the teachers to get out into the community. You're speaking all of the total faculty of a school district. But if this doesn't sound defensive, Mr. Wayman, we do run in-service workshops to try to bring knowledge and understanding to our teachers. And Mr. Wayman participated in one just recently for one group that we had, and Ms. Cacho, Bert Rivas, and Joe Becerra, to improve their effectiveness in working with these youngsters so that they will have some better understanding of them. And this may be the point to talk about some other things that we think are the right things to do and what we're trying to do.
Don't talk about them yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Talk about them.
All right, we're talking about them.
Well, I think it's necessary to answer the last statement of Mr. Donnelly, first of all. And then I'd like to give just a little short statement on the statistical aspect of it. I would like to state that the workshops you mentioned, I've only participated once in the workshops, and that was after the last dialogue. Mm-hmm. So I think that you are attempting to move in that area as of last dialogue. But I think there was a need, tremendous need, for these workshops prior to that time. Mm-hmm. You mentioned also that there is a sincere effort to try to work the problems out in the district. I have a couple of questions that perhaps would help this sincere effort.
Yes.
One of them, for example, is the Spanish-speaking people in the district office, Spanish-speaking people in some of the junior high schools and some of the high schools. I think this is a vital area because, frankly, most of the people down there speak Spanish. And if you don't have this link between your school and the community, I don't see any way how any method of really communicating to the student and to the parent. Now, for example, are there any Spanish-speaking secretaries in your district office? Fluent Spanish.
Yes.
Can you name the names?
No, we don't name them. We can name how many.
Okay, how many do you have?
We have just offhand. We have one in the accounting department. We have one in the personnel department. Purchasing department, we have two.
Administration.
And I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but we try to know several.
Because I know you have several individuals who you think speak Spanish.
Oh, no.
I know definitely that you have individuals who do speak Spanish, but they don't.
The one in the personnel department is there for that prime purpose because she can speak Spanish. In fact, that's one of the reasons she's there.
I'd like you to review that, though, to see whether they do speak Spanish and have someone go over there that knows how to speak the language to find out whether they do know how to speak Spanish. Just because they can say buenos dias, that doesn't mean they can speak Spanish. Another thing, too, one school I'm directly concerned about is National City Junior High. As you know, I've worked in that district myself, in that particular school. And there were no individuals there other than the students who spoke Spanish. Not one. In fact, one secretary was very, very eager to have me teach her a few phrases so she could get along. So National City is lacking individuals speaking Spanish.
How long ago was this?
About a year ago. And the same situation still exists. And these are just examples. I don't want to go into, because I can give you a lot of examples. I have them right here.
I just want to make comment to the chairman that some of the things in the past may or may not be true, but we more recently have made a more concerted effort. So I would like to talk more about the future and what we're doing and going to do. Let's forget about the past. Let's.
Well, you're not talking to the chairman now. You're going to be talking to individuals in the dialogue. I think this is what the dialogue is for. I think the chairman can talk to you, some other time. Yeah. But I think you should talk to the dialoguers, the ones who are directly concerned about the district.
Well, I think we cast a little more light on this, Bert, that we recognize the need for bilingual individuals. Bilingual and also Mexican-American. We realize that in many instances that they're going to have a better understanding of many of these youngsters, can work more effectively with them, and we're making a concerted effort to employ these people. Granted, we don't have a sufficient number right now. There's no question about that. But we are making attempts to not only get bilingual Mexican-American teachers and aides and so on, but I've got to say something about what's coming up here in the fall. We've got Spanish for staff members to acquaint them with the Spanish language so that there'll be people pronouncing a name like Humberto that way instead of Humbert. And also in that course, I'm sure there'll be some information like we had in our in-service workshop here in regard to the cultural heritage of these youngsters. I might say, though, I hope you didn't imply that workshop, that dialogue with the panel down there came about just because we had a dialogue session here. That was long in the making. That was planned some time back.
Yeah.
Did you finish?
No, it's so far. Okay, I'll have some more questions.
I think that last time it was pointed out at our last session that really these statistics that you presented this morning are really meaningless. If you want to take them, I think you can take them. But I think as Mexican-Americans, we have to speak to the reality and focus on the problem. I think that goes for both Mr. Rendon and both Mr. Donnelly. I think that a couple of statements were made. You said that you were willing, or the school district is willing, to accept their responsibility. What we're interested in is, have you met that responsibility? And this is what we're saying, that you have not met that responsibility. I think in terms of saying forgetting about the past, to me, I think it's very naive to think that we're going to be able to forget about the past, because these things have a definite effect of what is currently going on now. I think Max Rafferty made that same statement at a Nuevas Vistas conference in Los Angeles, and I didn't think I would ever hear it again. I think that what we're talking about now, I think, is, as Mexican Americans who are quite concerned about the seriousness of the problem, about the dropout rate, I think that we can talk, and I think, as Mr. Butler pointed out last session, that we don't need statistics to really bring up or point out the obvious. What we're interested in is, what is the percent of those Mexican Americans at the junior high school and high school level who are shifted or are shifted into the adult education program? What percent of the Mexican Americans are placed in special classes without telling the parents what these special classes are really consist of? Who runs an evaluation of those special classes, or do they end up as sort of play periods for the students? These are things that we're interested in. How about curriculum? You talk about giving teachers Spanish so that they can speak. Hell, we don't want Spanish. We want Mexican-American teachers in there. We're talking about sensitizing the teachers. Those teachers who are teaching English as a second language or teaching in those classrooms have no idea of what the Mexican-American culture is all about. We're going to teach them a few phrases in Spanish, but that isn't going to mean that they are sensitized to what we talk about, the Mexican-American culture. I think, as far as the student is concerned, I think we have to get away from placing the responsibility solely on the parent, or for reasons of pregnancy or employment or whatever it is. I think that we have to face a reality here, that the student has been really alienated from the schools, and he's been alienated by the Anglo in those schools, by the counselors, by the teachers, the image, the self-concept that he has of himself. These are things. Now, I know the last time after we met, we didn't even go into testing. What type of tests are being given to the Mexican-American students to place him in those mentally retarded classes? See, these are all areas that we can talk about in terms of really getting to what the problem is, the nucleus of the problem. We're facing realities here, and this is not a time to bring up statistics and tell us about what is being done. I think the last session, the press quoted Dr. Hall on these very statistics, and so this goes out into the public, the media. They read this, and they never get anything as to what we're talking about, as we're observing it. So these are things that I'm talking about.
Hold up a minute, Tom Johnson and Leon.
I'm sorry, Tom.
You get back in, Mr.
Yeah, it wasn't at the previous one or two dialogues, except that I think I can react to this. Perhaps one of the most significant things that was said when we were reading the statistical information was by Mr. Rendon here, when he qualified the 33 1/3% figure to indicate the weakness of using figures. I agree with you that there is a weakness in using figures, not just that one, but all these that we have here.
Of course, on the other hand, you have to start with something. In other words, you have to know where you are today in order to know where you're going to move tomorrow. So this is where we are today in order to improve our situation for tomorrow.
You have to start with something, and I think what we're really talking about here is what is relevant to start with, which is where we're holding the part. I echo what Frank said there about forgetting about the past and look to the future. I echo his thoughts there that the past is relevant to the kinds of decisions that need to be made as far as the future is concerned. From that standpoint, you can't forget it. There was some references made to the school system wanting to accept its responsibility. I was particularly interested in those references where it talked about the mobility of the people from which the kids come in this one school where there is a high dropout rate and the deficiencies in families or whatever it was, however that was described as contributing to these particular problems that exist in that school. However, I didn't hear anything, and I'm extremely interested in knowing what adjustments the school system is making in terms of how it presents the material to those kids, in terms of recognizing that these external factors exist, and how visionary is the school system in making adjustments to compensating adjustments for that. Kids generally learn whatever they want to learn, and I can probably, I won't take the time, but indicate to you some things that kids learn in the street on their own that in some cases are highly sophisticated, but they have a desire to learn those particular things that they do learn. Apparently, in your school system, in this particular thing that you're talking about, there is less of a desire to learn. Now, are the school officials smart enough to internally do something about that, or does it simply proceed on the basis that there is some standard format that it has to pursue, and that all of those kids who come from situations that can't relate to that standard format are just unfortunate? Or does the school system have a responsibility to relate to the child rather than insisting that the child relate to the school system's way of doing things? These are the kinds of things that I would like to hear discussed, and rather than a lot of figures which you yourself say have no validity.
Well, what I was saying, you have to have a large number to have a voice. A small number doesn't give you validity. I was
the louder, please.
Large.
Well, no validity. I won't
course,
speak this
it was my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that this is what you wanted us to start with, was to give you a report of our progressive dropout rate. And this is where we started. This was my understanding of what you wanted to start with.
I'm not quarreling. We started quarreling when you're bringing the figures here, and whatever the chairman asked you to bring, that's fine. I'm only reacting to them from a personal standpoint, and that is that some of the things that Frank mentioned, that is, aside from the cold figures of the dropout rate, what's happening to those who are still in school? And taking into consideration those things that you were talking about, what are you doing to internally to adjust for those considerations to create a learning situation in which the child will have a desire to learn? And everybody knows, and certainly as educators, I'm sure that you would recognize that a child will learn what he wants to learn. Now, is the school good enough to make him want to learn? And if it isn't, then what is it doing about it?
Once again, you can't ignore all the background information about a youngster as he comes to school as to how highly motivated he is to learn. We have our responsibility, too. And I must say that learning is a human process. It's something that takes place between a teacher and a youngster. The relationship that's created there has a lot to do with how highly motivated the youngster is. Now, when you talk about someone wanting to learn something, he has to see something in it for him, doesn't he? It has to be relevant. It has to be meaningful. And
you're raising my question.
Yeah, that's right. And we have a number of things that a youngster is supposed to take in order to get through school.
As you determine it.
There's a frame there. Yes, now there's a
problem with determining about his faith, of course.
But what I'm getting around to saying here is that there are kids with varying levels of ability. We do accept this as a reality.
That's reality for everybody.
Yeah. And for some youngsters who can't take a high level of English, we'll say, who would go on to college, then there's another level of English for those youngsters. Same thing is true of mathematics. I was certainly not cut out for algebra and geometry and trigonometry and so forth. And over the years, different levels of math and different courses in math have been established so that kids could meet those requirements. And these, of course, are areas that everyone needs. You need things in math. You need instruction in English.
Chairman, I'm going to interrupt you. I don't want to monopolize the conversation, except that I would have this reaction. What you're describing here now is different levels of math, different levels of English. I haven't heard you say a thing about different approaches to create the desire in the child to handle whatever level you want it to handle. You just talked about different levels.
But, yeah, and you've got an additional factor here, Mr. I've been recognized as Donnie. There's an additional factor here, and if you, and I think it relates to Tom's point, and that's the same thing that we mentioned last time with Mr. Hall, and that the reality of the thing is the product. What kind of student do you produce? That's really what that tells you the story. And I can say, from the exposure that I had as a student there, I can say from the exposure that I had working with the students there, and I can tell you from the recent exposure that I had in receiving students from there, that the product is not very good. And that's putting it mildly. Now, there's an additional factor here that I think that it's very relevant to the most recent occurrence. So that's this new school that's being constructed. It's called Montgomery Wing. Isn't that what it's called? Montgomery, no. What's
Montgomery High School.
Montgomery High School. You've got here two dimensions that I think are very vital. One of them is that you can make this school part of the community, you know. And you've named schools Willow Elementary, Sunset Elementary.
No, we don't have elementary.
Okay, Southwest. Okay, Southwest. You've called Mar Vista. Here's an opportunity for you to make this school part of the community. Call it some name that the community can identify with.
This was exactly what was done. It was identified with
the white
community.
No.
Yeah.
But that's just a
slight dimension of what I'm speaking about. And finally, in this school here, I think this is going to be a beautiful opportunity for you to segregate all the Mexicans. Mm. It's going to be a beautiful opportunity for you to do that, and that's exactly what's going to happen. I can foresee that school will be predominantly Mexican American because. The district where it's located, if I'm not mistaken, is one that will cover the Otay area, probably. It will cover many of the students that are going to Mar Vista now. Probably many of them that are going to Castle Park. So that I see that in this school, you're going to have predominantly Mexican-Americans, and you're going to probably end up with teachers who do not know the problems there, and the fact that they're going to be segregated, as I see it now, is going to be a very, very much of a detriment to the students.
The new homes are being built near the school, and the people are moving. Have you taken that into account?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the new homes in that area, yes. Why the school is located in that area?
But I foresee this happening, Mr. Rendon. I really do.
Well,
and I think something should be done to avoid this problem.
John, did you want to get another point?
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting point of what we've been talking about in these dialogues for years. They're building a bunch of new subdivisions, a lot of large housing tracts. These are people that are going to get FHA loans and so forth, and they're usually going to be white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. So we have to foresee that possibility, and so we've got to name a high school that will appeal to them. And these people that have been living there for years, well, you know, they're only a minority. I'd like to hit on another point, too, that I think is kind of important in regards to these statistics. Several people have inferred that they're kind of meaningless, but I think there are some things here that are interesting. I look on page 2 for the total dropouts for the Cutewater Union High School District, and it's 394. Then I look over on page 3 of Spanish surnames, and that's 134, which is roughly 34%. I look at consistently unsatisfactory attendance and or habitual truancy resulting in academic failure. For the total school district, it's 118. For Spanish surnames, it's 40, which is almost 40%. I look at lack of academic success. For the total school district, it's 52. For Spanish surnames, it's 17, which again is almost a third. This would indicate to me that although the school district has a relatively low rate of dropout, it's worked among the Spanish-speaking community leaves considerable, well, there's a lot to be desired. And I'm wondering if the people who prepared this report were aware of these differences in the totals, and if so, why wasn't a little bit more time given to these discrepancies and a little bit more elaboration to these particular figures?
I have a lot of names here, but sometimes when the points arrive that way, there are heated reactions to that point, and that's why I skipped some of you. And I'll be back to you. Delia, you wanted to say something a minute ago on that point.
No, it's another...
Oh, okay. Leon,
I'd like to say something
on that point.
I'd like to read... Are you familiar with Frederick Perls, Dr. Perls, in Gestalt Therapy? I'd like to read from an interview I had with him a couple weeks ago. Teach people to get more in touch with themselves and the world. Coming back to Conveyor Belt Man, he is in touch with an artifact. Now a teacher who is not in touch with his pupils will not get his pupils to learn much. They will be alienation and boredom. I think that's what the gentleman down here was trying to tell you. You
know, I don't question that. I accept that wholeheartedly. As I mentioned, learning is a human process. It's something that occurs between teacher and pupil. The teacher is the mediator of all of the information that goes into that classroom. And,
George,
I don't know who it was. Somebody of CTA who was quite vocal about this. He said he doesn't give a darn how much money you put in the schools, how much equipment and new materials. If you don't have the relationship between teacher and pupil, nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to happen. And that's the reason for the Spanish for teachers, for the employment of Mexican Americans.
Hold up, I feel you got your sentence. Hold up there.
Yeah.
Hold up there. I feel you got
your sentence.
I'd like to call a point of order here, because Frank Sy has brought up many relevant points, and I feel that since the Mexican American population predominates down there, that we ought to, and I would gladly defer, and this is the only observation I will make to him, because I think that Frank and these two men ought to be dialoguing so that they can understand what he is trying to say to them. And that, of course, I'm sure all the people who live in that area ought to be there. But I think that we ought to have him react to what Frank has said, and he brought up many beautiful points.
My point was on the same thing Frank said.
Okay.
That was the point where we left over it, and I thought that was very relevant, because it went back to the area. If the word mental retardation is the proper word, or if you understand what I'm saying, this is the thing where the teacher questions the child and measures his level of knowledge. And I think many times the teacher should be measured on their level of knowledge in comparison with the knowledge of what this child is supposed to get. In other words, it's like what Dr. Palomar put it beautifully once when he said he was a high school, he was a mentally retarded child, and now he's a PhD, you see, because he was judged by a white Anglo who didn't know what the hell they were looking for in him. So this is what's happening now in the Mexican-American school. You got somebody who's looking for something, don't know what the hell they're looking for. So the point of relevancy is who is to judge whether or not this child is mentally retarded or not, because they don't have a testing system which is set up on the standards for judging this particular individual. It's been based upon the Anglos, and this is the same problem in the black community. You don't know what you're looking for. You're looking for a child who can do the waltz and the modern dance. Well, I look for a cat who can do the boogaloo. You see, so you're not measuring the thing which this child is capable of doing. We go through elementary, go through San Diego State to learn to teach, and they teach you how to do the modern dance, how to play the dum 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 dum, and you got to go out to a black school and play that same thing on the piano. There's no motivation in that for a child to learn, and these are the curriculum which is actually established now. Okay, the point is to make way, which has been made through the state legislature, for you to now implement the curriculum, which is important and relevant to those children in which you're going to those schools. You have 7 basic requirements, from my understanding of this particular law, that you have to implement. Besides that, you can go to town doing whatever else you want to do. Now, the point is, will you go in that direction, or will you keep the same old standards way of doing things? And if you plan to do them, and you hope to improve them, then that's where you're going to make your mistake, because they can't be improved. That Mexican, that cat, that Chicano cat, he can't learn from what you, I don't care how you improve it, how you get that teacher to smile at him every day, how she learns to speak Spanish, this cat is just not going to do no well. You know, we're doing a Mexican hat dance. And if you want the cat to learn dancing, then you get the Mexican hat dance instead of the waltz in the school. And this is the basic thing we're saying. So what will you do to implement that which is necessary, as Tom said, to motivate the child to learn? And no, it doesn't matter what it is. It's the child is the product. You see, you're not graduating teachers, you're graduating students. So it's not relevant what the student thinks, teachers think is best to teach. What's relevant is what is best for the child in order to be the good product which you want to turn out.
We have hot hand over here.
Well, Keith, sure. I wanted to bring out something here that, in order to clarify here, that Mr. Rendon and Mr. Donnelly are talking to South Bay people here, that if we might have a show of hands of people who are from the Sweetwater School District here, from the area.
From a total area,
or have graduated there.
Who
live there?
Who
live there? Actually, who still live there?
I see the hand.
Mexican-American.
I digress a little bit here on recognition of groups. There is a group that is vitally concerned with the education of the Mexican-American, and not only Mexican-American, but education in general. And I was going to ask Mr. Rendon if he would recognize such a group, which is the South Bay Citizens Ad Hoc Committee on Education, to sit down and talk with you on many of the issues that are coming here now, where we can talk on home ground, so to speak.
Well, we, as you know, we already have such a committee that Mr. Donnelly meets with under our Title I Advisory Committee, and Mexican-Americans are members of that. Mr. Donnelly meets with them regularly.
How many of you are Mexican-American on that committee then?
How many, Mr. Donnelly?
Well, we're never really counting up, but
he's the one that meets
seven,
with
eight,
them.
Eight or nine.
How
eight
many
nine.
You say?
Well, we have some staff members on it. I shouldn't count them.
No, I'm just trying to clarify this
digress here. This is a new departure from the structure bound. These are citizens who live and are not in any way connected with any organization. They're just interested citizens in education. And they're not bound by having to go back to make decisions, organizational decisions. They make decisions there and now. And these are citizens from the Sweetwater School District.
We're meeting with them now.
How would this gentleman get into your group?
Ramirez is on our advisory committee.
But I find sometimes that the people who should be saying something are not there, either because of the time allocated to the meetings or because of the place where the meetings are held. And because they are not organizationally affiliated with the representatives.
We'd be glad to meet with any group.
No, I think he's raising another point, and I was trying to have him clarify.
This is what I'm saying.
Formal.
Are there a lot of people on this ad hoc committee that live in Chula Vista?
Yes. There are some. There are some who live in San Isidro, Imperial Beach, National City.
Well, I just had a short discussion with the chairman of the Human Relations Committee of Chula Vista. So perhaps sometime in the near future, our commission might be able to set aside a meeting time to take testimony from your committee, and so that you can enlighten us on some of the problems.
See, what I'm getting at is, here a while back at CIC, we did have a gentleman from the South Bay away from his home ground, and we were very severely trounced by the local newspaper because we did this. And I foresee something like this coming up again. And what I would like to do is South Bay people meet in the South Bay with South Bay school officials and South Bay citizens so that we don't get through the same hassle again as we did before.
Well, this could be expanded. I mean, this committee could be expanded. Mr. Donnelly has met with them regularly this past year.
He's speaking of a separate committee, and I think that we can't do anything right now, but I think we can meet with Mr. Ramirez.
Yeah, we can meet with him later and talk about it.
Yeah, did you want to add something to that point?
Oh, something else.
No, that one.
It'd be something related to this thing.
There were some other reactions to that point. Just stand up there, hold up there, man. Did you want to add something to that point? Both of you, go ahead, your lady first.
Well, I just was, before you get off the statistics, I noticed that the dropout, again, among the Spanish, which has not been Spanish surname, which has not been pointed out, reaches, of course, epidemic proportions. I just wonder whether, again, it is being treated right now, as it has in the past, I'm sure, as another dropout rate of the usual dropout rate of the Mexican-American. Now, I notice in school, junior high number 5, that the record is quite excellent, and I just wonder what are the factors involved in this excellent record. Now, I did want to say that in all fairness to Mr. Rendon, I feel that sometimes the seeds of dropout are begun perhaps in the elementary school district. I went through the San Ysidro Elementary School, went off to Southwest Junior High, and graduated from Chula Vista High School. And I do feel, of course, and one of my predominant feelings of going through all of these three schools, where I got my entire education there, my feeling was always not being a part of the American society. I read this in elementary school, in junior high, and high school. Little things like the Spanish is, you know, you're punished if you speak Spanish. I don't know if this has existed yet, but I know it was a very important thing.
What year did you graduate?
I graduated in 49 from Chula Vista High. But I did want to point out that I noticed the record in junior high number 5, and I just wondered what are the factors involved in here. And I also wanted to point out the epidemic proportions of it, and it should not just be treated as another Mexican-American dropout rate.
All right, before we get back to John's point, I thought you wanted to speak on the committee, I thought.
Yeah, I was just going to make a comment that your EFAEA committee is like most community committees. They don't really speak for the people who are on the nitty-gritty level, and they're not usually vocal to the point of dealing with the issues. I've seen this in so many places.
Of course, they select their representatives.
Yeah.
We don't.
Yeah.
They select their representatives.
Let me clarify something in regard to the selection of a Title I committee.
In the case of Title I.
The school selects the committee members.
The school, what do you mean the school?
Well, the school district.
Okay.
Now,
this is on Title
I. We did have suggestions from that group of people who were there, and from one CAC person who early in the formation of our committee suggested that we have a representative from each area, and I see now the EOC says that this should be mandatory. And so we've added representatives from, at their selection, whoever they would select from a CAC, plus the advisory committee did suggest some added members, and we got those. But in the original formation of the committee, we did select them.
May I stop here now and see if we can clarify this point, as John was saying there a minute ago. I think a dialogue on this point would begin to do what John was saying. This is a crucial point, and I don't think it ought to be just left hanging here. I can articulate it, but I think others articulate it better. I think we ought to talk about what's behind all this. Who should be on such a committee, systems approaches to selecting committees, organizational people versus non-organizational people, the whole thing that we went through here in terms of governmental committees and appointments, commissions here, I think that's what's being raised, and I'd like to stop and get some dialogue on that till at least everyone understands what you're talking about. How do you go about getting friends to recommend other friends, school selection, and all this stuff? This is what I hear, but I want to get somebody else's reaction to this.
May I say, just before that, Carol, I personally am, and this isn't attacking Sweetwater School District, but I personally am kind of hurt, in a way, by having, even though you asked, by having this kind of a statistical type approach to a problem, which is a kind of a human, a kind of down in the gut level. And many people who are not part of the system are intimidated by the statistics and the typical approach. So that many, many times, I think you don't even get a good response from many people when you come with this kind of thing, because they think, well, you know, they must know what they're doing. You know, they're above me and the perception is much greater. So people get intimidated, and you don't really get at what you're trying to get at. You sidetrack people and you continue with the same kind of device. And I like to see doing something like this, approach that you sit down and say, now what's the problem? Let's talk about the problem without coming in with, well, this is the way we're doing it, this is why we're doing it, and you've got to do this type of thing. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, that was not important. We come back to some little discussion before we do anything.
Yes, I was wanting to get that one point out of the way, committee, representation, feelings that about it, and then move on to another point, get that out. Now, on that point alone, on the committee that people in the community having some relation to the school as such, let's stick with that for a moment and get it out of the way. Richard.
Based on what I see here, I don't see any representation from the PTA. And I believe they should be invited, because the parents assume a lot of responsibility in motivating their children to stay in school. And I believe we should invite the PTA in sending their representatives here to point out to us the area of their difficulties in terms of getting along with their children, in terms of their relations with the school district.
I get a lot of hands on that, Mike.
You're talking about Norgal, excuse me.
The PTA, the Mexican American or the Mexican people, will not even participate in the PTA at all. They don't even believe in it.
This is a point where this is fine, Richard, for you to say in reality, and I wish what you're saying was really a true thing, that they were interested. But this is the same thing that's common in the black community and the Mexican community. So as of today, Frank is a PTA and Bert is PTA from the Mexicans, and I'm here in the PTA from the black community, so you got to hear.
On that point?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
PTA point?
No, any point. No. Community representation is what we really talking about.
Community representation, this is what I would like to talk to now. The group, the ad hoc committee that Mr. Ramirez is speaking of, I think is a very important group, because these people are the people that are really interested in the problem. They're very intelligent people. They have solutions or recommendations to solutions. And I think the thing that we want is an official recognition of this committee, because I work with PTA and I'm very interested in the ESEA programs and the Head Start programs. And I have had a battle all of this year with Policy Advisory Committee. And I won't bore you with the details at this time, but if you'd like to hear a story, I can give you one. I do not feel that there are any existence committees, policy advisory or otherwise, that could take the place of this ad hoc committee. And I urge very much today that Mr. Linden consider recognizing officially his ad hoc committee.
Well, all I can say is that before today, we've never, this has not been brought to our attention or asked for any official recognition. We do have these other committees, but this ad hoc committee that's been formed has been formed without our knowledge. If it's a different committee than what we've had before, is this a different committee?
This is a different committee that has been formed.
We don't know anything about this.
The lady next to you, Ms. Valdez, maybe we can get some reactions. If you've learned that for the first time today, one more has been covered well. And then Delia, all right?
Same committee. This was born out of a necessity lacking on the other advisory, because there's only two or three meetings a year, and what can you accomplish in one or two meetings? You've got to stick to the point, and you've got to work with the school system. And you've got to work on a very close level, because if you go once or twice a year just to revise proposals, you're not getting anything done.
Let me add something at this point, very germane to this, that our committee, we had met four times a year, but just at this last meeting or two, Mr. Ramirez, Mr. Torres, that we have a meeting once a month, and this is what we're doing. We've responded to their request.
How long ago?
About
3 months
ago. You want to add something to that point?
No.
I'd like you back to the committee. Selection of.
Okay.
I think it's very important, and I don't even think it's necessary to ask, that if this is in a district where there are many predominantly Mexican American in attendance, or here's one suggestion, that you exhaust every means possible to obtain Mexican Americans to sit on those committees. And also, those people who are going to interpret what those committees are doing should be Mexican American. I'm saying that for this reason, because there was a school in our area where ESDA funds were used to take an accelerated honors English class to go see Camelot. The Mexican American was still in his specially retarded classes, not getting anything from those ESDA funds. So I'm saying, to check this, exhaust all means possible to obtain Mexican Americans to sit on those committees. There shouldn't even be a question in anyone's mind on that.
On that point,
the people that are sitting on those committees, I would like to see, even if they're Mexican Americans, I would like to know what connection they are. Are they employed by the city, by that particular school, on any capacity where they, in a way, would be, their job is at stake or something like that. I think that this has to be looked into very carefully.
Ben,
PTAs are your organization, and you could make them so that people could really use them, but the fact is, I don't think they're doing that function. And
right,
this is
the
school board's failure to act.
Hold on, please, over here, don't react yet. I know how you feel, but don't react. Don't say a word, deviant.
There's another thing, going back to parent participation. You have Mr. Erickson is working in the district, has at least five groups in our area. None of them are in that Title I advisory group. And going back to that, I'm going to go off the subject a little bit. Is that I wanted to know, I know Mr. Donnelly is, and I've had long discussions with him about parent participation, how the Mexican parent looks at education, and goes back to the culture in Mexico, how they don't emphasize education in Mexico. And then they come into this new society and they're not aware of how the system functions. Okay, we talked about the health groups and how we were going to tell them how to clean their homes and how to be clean, and you know, the typical Anglo approach or middle class values who are trying to impose these health programs on the Mexican Americans. And all you did, and I don't know if Mr. Rinden is aware of it, and I know that Mr. Donnelly always gets static, and I wonder if the administration ever backs him, because he's gotten a lot of static on how he brings in the films, he shows these people, and there's no follow-up. So they show them a film. You know, what's that going to do? We don't have any health services in there. You have a nurse that's paid 50% of her time on Title I funds, and what in the hell is she doing in our area? She doesn't even go, she doesn't even know who the people are. She doesn't know the area, and all she does is put band-aids on kids' knees at Southwest Junior High. Where's the 50% that is due to, you know, to the area? You know, I'd like to know if Mr. Rinden is aware. I know Mr. Donnelly is, because I've told him. I want to know if the rest of the administrators are aware. I mean, you can sit back in your desk and sit all day, but I have parents here that are concerned. They don't know what's going on in the district. They don't even know about Title I's advisory groups. No one advises them. There's PTAs in the area, Southwest Junior High, many times. In that area, they don't speak in Spanish or in English. I've taken groups up there of 50 people where they've told us that they're going to speak in Spanish, and it's not translated.
Let me react defensively here.
No, I'm
just kind of half kidding here.
No, but Mr. Richard,
I also know that at Mara Vista High School, we've been trying to take parents And now, well, just recently, they've asked one of my aides to be an advisory, advisory capacity in there. But no one is, even at the PTA, is not advised by Title I. You know, you have parent groups that presently are left hanging because Mr. Erickson doesn't have enough time to work in our area. You know, it goes on and on.
I address PTA groups to get them information about ESCA.
Follow-up, Mr. Donnelly? Is there anything being done, just like those damn movies you brought in? You know, you show them and then you leave them. You know, what does this mean?
Let me explain a couple things here. Number one, we tried to get a half-time nurse because we had this allocated under Title I. That was Spanish-speaking or Mexican-American. And we got one person who lasted about 10 days, but she was not truly bilingual. She felt inadequate in the situation, and she gave up the job.
I'd like to elaborate on that. Do you know why she quit?
I am acknowledging this.
Do you know why she quit, Mr. Donnelly?
No, why?
And I was told because she was bored, because she didn't know what to do.
She told me that she didn't feel that she could really converse with the people.
Of course.
Beautiful, but
she didn't know what to do, and she was bilingual.
I understand that, Delia. I'm not making any bones about that. This is the point that Bert is talking to, about how bilingual are these people. You know, it's not enough just to say Buenos Dias. You have to really be fluent in the language.
Do you have any?
But this was the best that we could do, but it didn't work. And although she might have professed to be bilingual, we found out, and she found out, the person who really mattered to the individual here found out she was not bilingual. But that was our...
Just the fact that you hired her, Mr. Donnelly, just the fact that you hired a person without knowing whether it's bilingual or not is the whole point.
That's the point.
Well, that's the whole point.
Yeah, you see? Yeah. This we grant. And, but this gal came from Texas and talked about having, wait a second, she had described her work with Mexican Americans in Texas.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Now, we did what we thought was the best we could do here. We wanted to bring some health information to the parents in the community. Now, I know you shake your head and you say, this is not the thing to do. But, you know, as we talked about, there were some very important areas to be covered, like immunization. Get your kids the shots for polio and smallpox and so on.
Where?
Well, we don't run a complete health service. Maybe someday we will.
Feeding a baby with candy. That's why I said there was a follow-up.
John Erickson was there to give translations. You know, when the questions came out, like, where do you get this done? John was there to give the answers. Now, that's how he functions.
But
now
it wasn't done?
Yeah. And we put in a lot of time and effort. We sent away to Berkeley for these films. They're not available locally. And
the point is, Mr. Donnelly, is that you have a nurse, you can't find a bilingual nurse, you can't find one that, but you have community people that you can train that are very, very qualified.
You mean
that,
as a nurse?
An interpreter. Yeah, and can go into
this.
Remember, I told you, we have to work with her. She can't speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So get my aid, take her into the community.
Yeah.
There was no follow-up. I would have gladly lent you the aid to go into the homes and try to find out what the problems were. We could have had a health clinic through the Sweetwater School District if they would have pushed this and said, look, public health, we need a clinic here because our people aren't being properly nourished. They don't get enough sleep because we don't have proper health. We could have gone through a number of things.
You're talking about
that
a health
nurse.
Clinic. You're speaking about something run by the health clinic.
I know, but through your statistics, you have a hell of a lot to pull.
Okay.
Very good, Bert. I want to relate this to this ad hoc committee that's being mentioned here. I think the fact that you have had some problems in determining whether a person speaks Spanish or not, I think the ad hoc committee can help you in that area. The fact that perhaps you don't really know whether the secretaries in your own office where you operate out of know how to speak Spanish or not is another example where the ad hoc committee could help.
We do
the area, well, I can name a few individuals who you think speak Spanish. I mentioned that already.
this new high school is being formed. I think an ad hoc committee would do you a great service in terms of determining, for example, the name. The ad hoc committee can determine areas that your little PTA committees or your other the other committees cannot, because they've been very ineffective. This is why this suggestion has been made. So I would urge you to recognize officially this ad hoc committee, so that this committee can clue you in on some of the happenings, can clue you in on some of the deficiencies, some of the problems. And if you would recognize the committee officially, so they can give you some reports, and that you would review them and answer these reports, I think this would help a great deal. And you wouldn't have individuals who think speak Spanish, really don't.
Oh, I'm sure.
Art, you wanted to add on something to that point? Yeah, just one thing. I was in another school district where the school district thought they were hiring people who could speak Spanish. And it was true that some of them had as many as 15 units of Spanish in college. They were Castilian and didn't communicate at all to the people from Mexico. And I don't know whether that's part of the problem out there or not, but it might be worth it. All right, Mike, you want to add some of that point?
Just pertaining to the counselors in the school, if they have any Spanish speaking counselors that can go out there and test these people that you say that the fact is that are mentally retarded, if you can teach or test them in Spanish to really determine what their capacity is in education. Do you have anything like that?
Well,
you know, the English speaking, you know.
We have several Spanish speaking counselors. We have one down at Marvis High.
Mexican
American. Yes.
A
couple.
In addition to speaking, they have to take 30 units of graduate work beyond their teaching credential in order to qualify for a counselor to start with. And so there are not too many applicants in that category. You have to have another year of graduate work beyond your teacher credential in order to get your pupil personnel credential. And I might say at this point that every counselor in the Sweetwater District, and we have two or three in every school, are qualified with a pupil personnel credential ever since the law went into effect some 6 or 7 years
ago. Now, let me ask another question, Mr. Renard. No. Regardless of all of that, is saying, do you have them?
The point goes back again. See, that what like Bird said, is not just a person speaking Spanish. I don't care if you've got 200 units.
Right.
It's the feeling of way of relating any language that you go into. It's the feeling that you put into it to communicate with that child. So if you go in there and say, como si, yeah, chiquita, you know, why won't get it? See? I mean, you know, that's what the county learned. You got to put your finger into it.
Thank you,
it's very appropriate at this point to raise the question. Mr. Rendo sort of played it beautifully by referring to the pupil personnel credential. Now, I think that we in our whole society, we've talked about it here before, we're stuck on this idea of qualifications,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And qualifications get in the way of getting the job done.
Yeah.
We get what we're supposed to do and we get qualified. And we look for qualified people to the exclusion of whether or not they can do the job. When we were talking about this area, start looking at what do we want to do first and see how we're going to get it done before we start looking for somebody who's qualified by some standards that fits something over here.
Well, the only problem is the law requires it. This is not our doing. The law requires a pupil personnel credential. So all I'm saying
is getting a job done.
In addition to the Spanish, we must also recognize the pupil personnel credential.
Well, maybe we can change the law.
Well, that's fine. I wish you would.
And that is, and I've heard this all morning, we get up to a point and then we can't do this because some other factor is in our way. Or we're hung up because the elementary schools do this kind of a job and we're receiving the product. Or the law says we can't do this. And so we operate our educational system in a series of vacuums. Each one unrelated to what else is going on in society. And the educational system is nuts. isolated from the rest of society. It has a responsibility if society isn't doing what is necessary so that the educational system can do its job to get out of that school building and get out of the administrative offices and get out into society and try to get society itself organized so that education is realistic, so that it performs what it has to do.
That was the intent of the assembly bill
on the exact statistics. Are you going to come back to the statistics?
If we can use them as you would, Judge, of course, you know, in the sense that this is what over here.
This is what I want to talk about, the reality of what we're talking about. The statistics are useful. I'm glad we brought them in, because what they show me this morning is that we get hung up in the middle of the problem and we never get back to the basic cause. This is what I heard as we went over the statistics. The employment, the excessive number of boys, 75 boys. Well, these are economic problems, so that's the explanation to the school system. These are economic problems.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not an explanation at all. That's merely the indication of an effect. The explanation is someplace else of which the school system is a part, and it ought to be doing something about it. We get down to lack of academic success, and these are the reasons for the explanation. Behavioral adjustment. Well, why? Why behavioral adjustment? What is the this is just an effect of something that is more significant. What is the educational system doing about getting back to why there are behavioral adjustments? Overage. Well, why are they overage? Why do you have any number of them in the school system at this point who are overage and therefore are lacking academic success? Insufficient credits. That doesn't explain anything. That merely says that there's something wrong with the school system in some way, that these kids get to this point and they have insufficient credits. Lack of interest. That doesn't say a thing except that something is wrong behind the lack of interest. Or that there are probation, a lot of probationary problems and YA parolees, as though the school has nothing to do with the dynamics of these kids who have at some stage in their life become probationary problems or youth authority parolees. And the question of attendance, well, it's difficult to enforce attendance. Well, okay, it's difficult to enforce attendance. Now, there are two ways of looking at that. Why is it difficult, or what useful purpose do all these attendance rules serve? Maybe it's necessary to give some rethinking to the attendance rules that the schools have, which result in a lot of dropouts because of difficulty to get attendance. And so these statistics prove something. They prove that the school system, as is true with every school system I've ever come up against, is hung up in the middle on excuses, and they never get back to the reasons for those excuses. On this business of advisory committee, I'm going to get everything I have saying, and I'm going to stop the rest of the day.
You're going to do that?
Yes. Yes, I am. I haven't said a word up to now. An advisory committee, I've sat on a lot of advisory committees, and most of them are kind of sterile, because they're called in by the one who seeks their advice to advise them about a fait accompli. I mean, it's all decided now. Tell us what you think about it. The only useful function an advisory committee can serve, at least in this area, and I think in most areas, is to get them in and say, now advise us, please. I mean, give us some input from where you are, because the function of the educational system is to serve the people in society, and serve it in the context of society itself, really, in the realities of society. And if an advisory committee is going to be called in to say, now this is what we're now thinking of doing, what do you think about it? It's really a useless process, an exercise in futility, because it's too late. At that point, those who seek advice become defensive about the advice they get. It's too late. They've made decisions, and all they want to hear is, how can you implement this decision, or how can you serve as the public relations media so that we can get people to buy what we've already decided for them?
So if you're going to have an advisory committee, have it at the beginning, not at the end.
Yeah. You've got another point there now?
I have some more, but I'll speak quiet.
All right, but over here, and then we'll get back here.
Yeah,
I want
to
make a final one, too.
Observation of the law would be, I'm sure, the zone has scrupulously, wants to follow this law of the, in putting in counselors into the school district. Why don't we also observe the law or use the implementation of this new law that the time the gentleman was talking about getting a curriculum change? You see, we are really working in a very archaic structure as far as curriculum. I think this is over 50 years old. What have we done really in these changes? We're saying that the law says this. Well, we have a law already in favor to change these curriculums. Why aren't you doing it? This is what we should be observing,
simply,
being scrupulously and maybe religiously about it.
Simply because the law you're talking about isn't even in effect yet. It isn't going to effect till October. It just passed the legislature.
Well,
this new law just went into effect.
Let me refer to the legislature and give you the references that they're talking about. So everybody here knows about the new legislation, some of its details, instead of my doing it. Bob, would you
I'm very happy to hear that you're real concerned about the law, because I'd like you to read you the law related to curriculum. This has been in effect since 1965, and I'm sure you're aware of it. Education Code, Section 7603, this is related to curriculum. The study of the role and contributions of American Negroes and other ethnic groups in the history of this country and this state shall be an integrated part of the required courses in the history of the United States and California. Section 7700. The courses in history prescribed by subdivision shall include the study of the role and contributions of American Negroes and other ethnic groups in the history of this country and this state. And I'd like to raise this question. We'd like to know what you have done since 1965 to implement this law, because I know you're concerned about observing the law. Could you give us the course of your office, tell us the teacher preparation that you have, the textbooks, the in-service training for teachers who we know don't have a background, except with rare exceptions. What has the Sweetwater District done in this?
Well, I can't go into teaching of all hands. Our director of curriculum.
Nothing.
No, we can't hear you.
Whether you can answer this off the cuff or whether this would take a little. Mr. Menzel is our director of curriculum, and I don't know if he's got this on the top of his head.
I think that this water topic could be answered, within 2 minutes here. We'll
give it to you. Tell the truth.
I think what you're saying here, there are two things.
What are you hearing?
One is...
Are you now responding to his question?
Yes.
All right.
And to a previous one.
All right.
Senate Bill 1, which has just passed the legislature this year, goes into effect a certain number of days after the legislature adjourns, which puts the effective date for what we call the flexibility of the curriculum sometime in October. Now, to change curriculum does take some time. For example, your classes are scheduled. Now, this sounds like excuses, but I don't mean it in that manner.
It's a well, it is.
3 years.
It is.
Let me come to that.
You got a lot of
points there. One is the new law, Senate Bill 1, which we have had the publicity about, which says you may do much more localization about curriculum in school, will go into effect during this school year. I'm saying that in addition to that, then the teachers and those working with changes do need some time to change. You cannot immediately, the next day, say everything's different because you're working with many people. We do intend a very intensive study of curriculum change and appropriateness of the change to the needs that you, these whole groups, these meetings are talking about. We intend to do something. This is my first point. Second point, this law of 65 specifies very specifically that Mexican Spanish contributions to California and to the United States, the Negro contributions and other contributions shall be taught
as an integral part
of the U.S. history course.
The state of California has adopted a new textbook, which frankly has caused some trouble for teachers because they have not been too well informed about many minority contributions. So you have the problem not only of textbooks, but upgrading of teachers.
There you go.
Which is a total problem that we've been talking about here all morning, isn't it?
That's not a problem.
If a person is not that way, we have to inform them, don't we? We have to bring the teacher, develop the teacher too. We have many, I can't name the booklets for you, materials to assist not only the teacher but students in this area. I would end by merely saying we recognize the problem, we have a job to do, and we're going to give you our promise we'll do it as fast as we can. That's my
Three. He started, he had another reaction over here to Frank, and then Jerry on the same point. One, two, three, four, five, six.
you already have admitted that you are going to do something about it, and you're going to have to get this structure going. Now, what are you going to do about getting the parents involved in helping formulate this change? Are you going to let the structure do it, power structure do it, and push away the parents? Or what kind of a setup do you have in involving parents in helping you set up the curriculum? Because I think this is a very important area, and we should not leave them out or exclude them.
You can't leave them out, because he just said they don't know how to do it.
Well, don't answer.
You can't leave them out.
Oh, okay. He wants to direct.
I personally, as a person in the district, would be glad to get your suggestions how we could implement. I don't know how to answer.
Wait a minute, Jerry, you want to have something to the legislative bill, I think.
I want to talk about legislation, just make a few comments, because I've been following a lot of this legislation in Sacramento.
Can you make yours just on legislation, then get him and come back to you for the other side?
Okay, good.
I've been listening all morning.
Just a minute. Excuse me.
I've been listening all morning.
I'm taking over this thing.
In my mind, is the need to discuss a hidden agenda that doesn't, or a hidden curriculum, a hidden agenda that's not even surfacing. I think we're all trying to do something for a child who is outside the established educational process, where our curriculum is outdated, irrelevant, and certainly inadequate. In connection with this bill, it has been discussed, I know for a fact, for the last 3 years, in the state of California, with the tenor of the country, the way things are going, I've known, you've known, all of us who've been anywhere inside the educational process have known that drastic change has had to occur. I would like to speak to the point that all of you who are in a position of authority are also likewise in a planning position and have a responsibility to the constituency that your district serves, to be prepared to take advantage of the kinds of legislation that will get the job done. SB 1, which is now the Miller Bill, was fought for very hard by the district, San Diego district last year. They did a study. I'm very, really curious to me that you have not laid plans that would immediately be implementable under the law for SB 1. But the next question, which is the hidden agenda, is this. You already have the authority to do all kinds of experimentation in terms of curriculum development, the uses of people who do not have the necessary, quote, book qualifications for jobs. You can say how to qualify people in this state with a doctorate, two master's degrees, and they're not qualified to be counselors in your school. So that's no excuse in terms of qualifications. I would like to see us talk also to the basic planning function of all people in authority to move with the times and to be ready, because if you don't, I think we have a perfect right to question your total commitment to change. And in the educational system, if it doesn't change drastically, if the whole educational system doesn't change almost overnight,
right,
then we are setting ourselves in a position to put up what I would call outside educational systems that are going to show you how to get the job done.
Thank you.
It's called
Thank you.
I feel confident in talking to this point, because I have talked to the people in Sacramento
bills don't move overnight. I'm up there with your lobbyists from all over the state who know what's happening. If you can't pay these people to feed this back to you, then they should be fired and people put in their place who can do it. And they should become a part of the basic planning function. Education is no longer pure from politics, and we'd better get with it and learn to use it to get all these changes implemented overnight. If we had a national crisis, we would pull up tomorrow and we'd get the job done. This is a national crisis.
The director of the curriculum, I think that it just goes to show, really, as far as sensitized people working on curriculum for brown and black people, or brown people in this particular area, if there is an assistant to you, is he Mexican-American, or why don't we replace you with a Mexican-American who can do the same job?
Right.
The other thing is, I think that what you said about intending to do something, I think that we've been suffering from your intention since 1900s, and we still are at the same point right now. I think that all that you pointed out as far as curriculum is concerned changes it in the curriculum. I don't think that there has been, or I think that the gentleman's question here hasn't even been answered, it hasn't even been touched on, as to what curriculum. The only curriculum that I know of is the Alamo, you know, how the Mexicans were defeated and this type of thing. And this doesn't do too much for my self-concept. So I'm saying, one, let's get someone in there who in that curriculum department who knows something about the Mexican-American. Preferably, the only solution I can think of at this point is a Mexican-American, and your intentions, to me, don't mean a thing.
I was in Los Angeles yesterday in the Brown Watch, the day before yesterday, of East L.A., and I talked to many people that have become very knowledgeable that don't have, that aren't dressed around degrees and diplomas. They are working around even Mexican Americans who are brainwashed in colleges and come out just spouting the same curriculum as before because they're afraid to spout anything different. They should be given the if they have any creativity left, they should be given the right to enforce it or to use it. And I think that all these school programs have to look into the people. They might have to pay them as consultants, because that's all, those educational people get a lot of money for consultants, and look what they've been doing with that type of advice. I think that every one of the school districts have to go in and find creativity in the people and start using them. They can orient them, it doesn't take long, to the problems and to the obstacles they will have to fight in the just general course of education.
But make sure she got her point now. The point is, hell with the PhDs, MAs, and BAs. She's talking about people who know their history. I didn't learn no black history from no school, and I didn't get no degree in black history. I wanted to learn. You have Mexican cats who are doing the same thing. So don't get hung up on credentials when you're looking for the Mexican cat to help you with your curriculum.
Bob, I'd like to take this liberty, if I might, Carol, to point out that there are very adequately developed materials now, and I'd like to present these. I took the liberty to bring them along here to the Sweetwater School District.
We have these materials.
Read those.
These are good materials, and we're glad to have another set if you want to give them to us.
Would you read off the titles of those, please?
Hey, Weller would help.
Let me see.
Put them in the family.
Before we get those into the records, would you please just read off the title so others can hear it as well as get it on the record?
All right, first one is The American Negro. Old World Background and New World Experience.
That only costs $1.62 for a copy.
Next one is Eyewitness, The Negro in American History. And then The Role of the Mexican-American, use supplementary unit for your use in teaching United States History 2 and United States History 8. And then Understanding the Mexican-American in Today's Culture.
I want to know about the Mexican-American. Who wrote them?
Prepared by Alexander Biliev, Eleanor
Erzman, Lilia,
Guzman. Okay.
It says Herzman here, H-E-R-Z-M-A-N.
Yeah, I wanted to be sure to get it right.
It is. The role of the Negro in United States history.
Have you got one down there
compilation of information?
Have you got one down there called The History of White Racism in America?
Not in this file.
You need that.
That applies to us too.
Right.
You mean, do we have one? He said, no, we don't have one here.
No, say the role of white racism in America.
That's the foundation check, really.
Tom, I couldn't recognize you earlier. We had some other comments.
You're giving them away.
They want to wrap this up, and I have one or two statements to make about what we did bring out today. We put on top of the table. We didn't solve a lot of them, but they indicated they have learned some things, and I think we're going to tie in a few things specific so we know where to go next time. Bert? Tom, then Bert?
I just make mine as quick as I can, Carol. There's a message here.
Hold it just a minute, Tom. Things are still hot.
There is a message here, and in the early part of the meeting, there was some discussion from the gentleman across the table here about these family conditions and whatnot that contributes to the high dropout rate in this particular school and the kids not being motivated and whatnot. And that's kind of traditional with the school system to point to external factors, and the judge brought that out beautifully. But I just want to make the point that also, this gentleman over here said something about his teachers not being well informed on Mexican history or black history or anything like that. And all teachers are products of the school system, of course, so that means the school system has turned them out that way, uninformed. Now, it's kind of a thing with the school system to keep pointing to external things, and especially the family life, as being the problem, and what the message is here is that your school system is the problem, and if that isn't perceived, then you've missed the message. And I suggest that as long as the school system hides behind these external factors as a rationale and justification for its failure, then school administrators haven't gotten the message. And that, and until you do get that message, and I suggest that school officials, and maybe possibly excluding those here, are nothing but paid lackeys who are hired to maintain the existing order of things. And until this is visualized, that's exactly what they are.
Now, if I may speak to that for just a moment here.
Let me see.
That's defensive.
Hold up, please. I know how you feel. But, sir,
I'm really not defensive.
I know you're not. We want to be sure of it. We want to be sure of it, and we have a hunch that this is one way to be sure of it for a moment, all right, Bert? Bert, right.
But two things before the thing terminated, that I think the basic question or problem that's been created here is, I've been pointed out, I should say, is that there is a need to create an atmosphere for learning in that school district. And I think one of the things that can be done to create this learning atmosphere is to have some committee show you and teach you. And I think that the ad hoc committee can do this. I hope that, I'd like to get a response from Mr. Rendon whether he accepts or rejects the ad hoc committee. He's quibbled a lot. I don't know whether you want that committee or not, whether you feel it's feasible.
I don't think, Mr. Rivas, that I can say yes or no on the top of my head. I'd like to know more about it and discuss it, and I think that I have the right to know more about it. In other words, you've asked me cold about a question, and I say I'd like to know more about it.
Well, I think the you're asking questions about the composition. Do you agree that there is a need for someone to teach you some of the things that you are learning today, for example?
Well, let me say that our school district by no means is perfect. I don't think any school district is perfect. We have weaknesses. We recognize them. We are constantly striving to improve our schools. And I would like to ask anybody in this room to compare our statistics I'd like to ask anybody to compare our statistics with other school districts. I heard a week ago George Hall says they have a holding power of about 92%. We have a Spanish surname dropout of around 8%. So if the same district, the holding power of 92 or a dropout of 8. And even though our
you're getting a lot of heat, Mr. Rendon. Good communication.
All I want to say is that maybe our figures don't look so good, but compared to Los Angeles or Sacramento or some other district, I don't think we're quite that bad.
In other words,
I recognize, I'm the first one to admit that we're not perfect, we need to improve. I admit that wholeheartedly. Now, I'd like to conclude by...
No, hold on. Don't conclude yet. Don't conclude, deliberately. You're getting a lot of heat, which means people are feeling what you're saying, and I'll let Mac Junkins capture what everybody's feeling for you. Mac, no, I'll hold on to the
question. Just react, Tom.
On his point, Tom, you know.
Mr. Wayman, I'm comparing Joy Call's holding power figure with a dropout figure, and that's not legitimate. A holding power figure, which you laughed at last week, but nobody understood, actually counts the students at the end of the sixth grade, and then counts them again at the end of the 12th grade. And from that, you say we were able to keep 82% of them. A dropout figure, if I understand it, you start in September, and then you count again in June, and then you get a dropout figure. So if the kid drops out in, say, July or August, then you have no way of counting. Now, you indicated last week that your interest was in the kids that drop out from September to May. You have no interest in those who drop out July, August. But our figure includes those. Your figure does not. So I doubt whether there's...
Well, the difference is yours is over a longer span. Ours is 1 year and yours is longer.
Yours is for 10 months.
That is not what we're talking about.
So it doesn't include those kids who reside in the summer not to high school.
All right. That's what we have to take up.
Very important. Well, I wouldn't have reasoned it except you wanted to say that our holding power figure is the same thing. It's not.
All right. And you were asking the other point.
What was the other point?
With Los Angeles, et cetera.
Our holding power figure is the best one that we have seen, but we don't claim it's the best that there is, because we don't know other school districts that have used this measurement. This measurement says that over a 6-year period, we lost, in the ESEA schools, we lost 18%. So we lost about 3% a year over a 6-year period, counting 12-month years.
Comparing this school system with Los Angeles or San Diego or anyone else is irrelevant because they're all bad.
Right.
These teachers that this man over here was talking about who don't know a damn thing about what they're supposed to be teaching in school came out of all of those school systems in San Diego.
Right.
And they're all just as bad. None of them know.
That's the captive.
So what do you think?
I think the basic thing, though, goes back to what Judge Lindley said. He has a definition of education, and I wonder whether these gentlemen subscribe to that definition of education. Because I think that's pertinent, and I think that's basic. If a kid gets to school without breakfast, and we know he can't learn without being fed, is it your job to know he's not been fed and to feed him? Is that your job?
We know about these instances. We're not like the elementary school, and we're somewhat a little more removed from families. But for youngsters who are in need of a meal at school in some way or another, we may miss some, but we do find out about them, and they are provided a meal at school.
Do you see the role of the school as going out and meeting every other necessity?
as it affects the kid in the school? Or do you see the school as staying within the confines of the building?
No, if you're talking about do we take into consideration, now we're not an all-encompassing social agency to deal with every problem in the community. We can't do that. But if you're asking, do we take into account
if it relates to the
background?
Yes,
we take into account everything. I was a home school visitor for 8 years, and I've seen countless situations of kids who don't have enough food or don't have the clothes. And I've seen some youngsters whose very poor attendance pattern was because of acne on the face or something like this. Something not directly tied to school, but it is a school concern.
Black on the face does that too.
Brown too. What I'm saying is we do take all the information about a child into consideration.
I don't think you really grasp her point. Tom, you want to add to that point? Tom, you want to try to highlight her point?
What I was getting from the judge here, and maybe he'll back me up on this, is that does the school system have decided that it is its mission to succeed in educating kids properly in spite of all of these external factors you talk about? I think that's are you willing to use those external factors as rationales and justifications for your failure?
We certainly wouldn't settle on this matter of a rationale for failure.
Then you have to be responsible for the product that you're turning out. The product you're turning out is bad. That means you're failing.
Let me say this. In spite of the dropout that you see here, this is
not talking about dropouts. I'm talking about
school failure. That's one side of the coin. What we have an exam here of how many instances where there are people in the school who do understand kids. They may not be the same color or speak the language, but there are people who are thoroughly and totally committed to the welfare of youngsters, and I know this to be the case, who have worked to keep a lot of kids in school who might otherwise have dropped out.
I understand it. It all boils down to what Bert said. The end product you turn out, and you're not doing a good job of that. Now, if you accept the responsibility for doing that,
we do,
then you're failing.
Okay, hold it there. On.
Mr. Wayman, I'm sorry, but I get terribly frustrated when I don't get recognized, and I tend to want to cry.
It's all right.
I think the purpose of this meeting is to get through to the school district and speak to Mr. Rendon. And we're crying out a need, and I think that we're at this point harping back on this ad hoc committee. The school recognizes that they've missed the boat. We want to help them. We don't want any more failures. There are no perfect school districts, that's right. But let's make ours a little better working.
Well,
Okay,
and I won't speak anymore. I'd like to ask a question to Mr. Rendon, because Mr. Donnelly always gets blunt a bit. Well, I think Mr. Rendon, Mr. Donnelly. Donnelly has been on is always in the limelight, getting shot to heck, and I think you're totally responsible for him. I graduated from school Vista High School, and
I remember you.
But they discouraged me from going to college. Another thing, what I really want to get to is Mr. Erickson's position, which is vitally necessary. I know that he's been cut left and right, and I know that he's been pressured by the school system, and I wanted to know whether or not how essential you feel he is. Do you know how the parents, the Mexican culture, why parents react the way they do? Are you aware that they don't know how the education system functions? Are you aware that they should, that it is the responsibility of the schools to somewhat tell them how they function, what Are you aware that they should be told what ESL classes are, or why their children are in
community
kind of classes? English is the second language. And I'd like to know if Mr. Erickson's job will still be there next year. Will he get additional help? Because it is a large district, and he is spread thin, and he's not doing, he can do a job if he was concentrated in one area. But as it is now, he's leaving parents hanging, especially in the San Ysidro area. He starts parent groups, and all of a sudden they're dropped and no longer get any follow-up. Because of all the workload he has. I'd like to know whether or not there's going to be additional money in this area, because it is necessary, because in order to teach their children, you have to educate their parents.
Right, certainly agree with that. And Mr. Rennan really isn't privy to this particular information.
Should be.
Well, about our advisory committee.
I want to interfere here because she deliberately asked Mr. Renzo. If he can't answer, then I'll recognize you.
I'll answer it this way, that I prefer not to enter into the personalities at this point. This is under a personality problem, and I don't think this
it's not a person. It's his position. I don't care if it's Mr. Erickson or the man on the moon. I'm talking about...
You named a
person. Well, it's his position, or the community aid.
You modify yours, you're talking about his position.
Yes.
I would agree that a community aid is very important. I'm not talking about an individual, and this is why we have a community aid at the present time. If we didn't think it was important, we wouldn't have.
Well, why is he being cut all the time?
Is he going to be fired next year?
Yeah,
he's being cut all the time.
Is he going to be fired next year?
Cut off from last year's funds, he was.
He doesn't know he's going to be fired yet.
That means he will.
I don't think this is a personality.
I'm talking about the position. And as somebody, and if you're going to fire him, I want somebody just as qualified.
My answer is, I don't want to enter personalities. The position is important. If something should happen that the present employee should leave, it would be our desire. It would be our desire that this position be replaced by someone.
Please, let me rephrase the question so you don't get hung up with personality. Mr. X holds a position. Will the position that Mr. X holds be available next year, as far as you know, now?
As far as I know today.
All right.
I should be responding to this because it's in our program.
Well, I'm going to let you get it from Mr. Endock.
Now, let Mr. Donnelly elaborate.
All right, good.
That position is built into the program for next year.
Just one?
And then our advisory committee has suggested reviewing the position for expansion, if to appraise it and assess it, and to see if it needs strengthening, bolstering.
The advisory committee to you?
The advisory committee. Mr. Ramirez, Mr. Ford, around that. And we're studying this component of the Title I program. And if it merits expansion, we'll have to make some adjustments within our program, but that's what would happen.
Well, you answer first to her question, as you asked. It's being reviewed for possible expansion.
It's being continued.
She got another question. Would it be cut?
Yeah. Well, is it going? How about the salary?
No, there'd be no cut in salary. No, there would be no cut in salary. I thought at first you were referring to the mileage factor that we talked about last year. But because we were running short of money, we wanted to make more.
Is there any possibilities of expanding the program?
Yep.
Is it a good possibility? Let's put it down.
I think it's reasonable. If that's a reasonable possibility, when you say good possibility, I don't want to.
All right. Now, does that answer your? You had specific questions. Yes. Does that answer them? All right, Bob.
All right, now I want to lay this on the table. Maybe I missed the boat. Maybe this has been discussed before. I've been the free dialogue.
On the school.
On the school, yeah, strictly on education. I'm talking only this point. The thing that's really bothered me here, first of all, it seems we all admit that we're interested really in the student, you know. That's been sitting there year after year with minor or token changes, and he's ending up really a poor product in many cases. And yet when we come here with the school board, this is our school people, city schools, the Sweetwater District, we don't seem to be able to carry on a very good dialogue, because instead of admitting that we're all interested in the same thing, we end up hearing defenses. We hear all this defense approach to what has already been done, how good it is, constantly a concern for self. You see the corporate influence here, sell the product, convince everyone that the product we're turning out is good, you know, and there's never really the acknowledgement here, we have a problem, here's all the evidence of it, it's continuing, these kids are the ones that are being hurt, and we sit around here lollygagging, and that's what we're doing, that's snow good. Jobbing with a few tokens. When are we going to really sit down now and say, look, we haven't done very much, we admit it, but we are committed, let's move.
That's their point. The lady almost cried. That was exactly her point. We just let the hell out of it, go back in the dialogue, and again, keep BSing all the way. What are we going to do? And now it's a defense.
It seems to me that we have been totally defensive about this. I admit some defense here, but isn't this in the order of human affairs that when you have some criticism that you're going to react to it? I don't know where you teach, what classroom, but I might go in there and I might find some critical areas there as one educator to another. I don't know how you'd react. Your teacher will say, everything that you told me here is absolutely true. I can't justify a thing that I'm doing.
But we haven't heard that here. That's the point. We have never heard, you're right, that's the truth. Right. What can we do about it together? That's the point. Instead, we say, here's a brochure, here's a pamphlet, here's what we're doing. Look at this pretty and technicolor and all this stuff. We're doing a wonderful job as of tomorrow. It's always, you know, we have it for 1 week or 2 weeks or you know, what it's always in, or we're going to.
Well, I think something specific came up here that I'd like to follow up on, and that is this curriculum thing. To me, it's shocking, and Mrs. Rickman pointed this out. To me, it's shocking that now you would say that the law has been passed, we will begin to plan to do something about it. None of us would run our own affairs this way.
Now, in responding to that, I suppose we're defensive again.
Don't play that.
No, I don't play that. Every time,
you have a sound. The Mexican-American curriculum.
Yes, we do.
You have a Mexican-American curriculum.
Yes, we heard of that. Well, if you'll accept this as a step forward, as an honest and sincere effort to begin working in this area where some work needs to be done, we have a bilingual course down at Southwest Junior High. 8th graders. It's in, the book is in Spanish, the instruction is in Spanish. We have purchased slide films of Mexico and Spain, of the Southwest, to relate.
See, hell, we're concerned with the Mexican-American right now. You're speaking of one school, We're talking about total system program, the Sweetwater School District. This is what we're concerned with. Now, let's not bring up these other things that he just got to point out. This is the procedures that the system or that you administrators fall back on.
Right.
Yes, but we have this. Right. And I just got to saying that we've been suffering from your patchwork, tokenism, and curriculum and everything for the last 100 years. Jeez. Now we're saying let's do something about it.
And related to this, Carol, is the fact that I have heard no commitment of even recognizing the need for the ad hoc committee. This is mentioned several times, once by the lady over there. No commitment. You want to know more about the ad hoc committee? Well, what do you want to know about it? This is an opportunity for you to receive information from the community to rectify some of the problems. And if you have to know more than that, then I think you're quibbling.
These are Mexican-American educators, too.
I think this is important, too. I hate to break in here, but by Mr. Rendon's and Mr. Donnelly's statements, it seems to me that some of the people that are on this ad hoc committee are already on the advisory committee. And it's my understanding that these people moved away from the advisory committee because they were never listened to, that in many cases they weren't even allowed to see certain projects, and that is why they went out and formed this ad hoc committee. Am I right on that, Jesse?
That's right.
the thing there.
Hey, listen to Lady in Green. I don't want to find her.
Jesse has answered that question. Two ladies over there.
No, I don't want you to cry. It's not part of our culture.
It's not part of your culture. Go ahead, yeah. And then Mrs. Valdez, I think.
If they want to know more about the committee, Mr. Ramirez and Mr. Torres, and I think there's a few members of us here, so all we want to do is help. We've got kids in the area. We've got kids in the school.
You better hurry, because she doesn't have much time. I attended this meeting in San Isidro in May, and I would like to project here, I thought that was the biggest fiasco that we've had of the century. And at that time, I talked to you about Manuel Alonso. We've talked here today about how to stop the dropout and different solutions. Are available recommendations. One question I'd like to ask. Alonzo has had an application in with the Sweetwater District for 3 years. He's never heard from them. We know that there is a doctor, teacher in Puerto Rico that has very impressive credentials. He has written over a year ago an application to the Sweetwater District. This man has had to write to acquaintances in California to see if they could do anything to get him a job. Now, this is the one thing, if you remember, and Mr. Torres also, it was stated, we can't get the Mexican-American that is qualified to come and teach in our schools. I want to know, where are all these Mexicans hiding right now? Why does the district ignore these applications?
Okay, leave out the name and raise it to the other level so it can be answered. What methods or techniques that are now being used to effect those kinds of getting people like you're talking about? Leave out the name. Look at the question she's asking if you can.
We have been making...
Hold up a minute. We'll be leaving in a minute. Hold up, please.
We have been making every effort. In fact, just Monday and Tuesday of this week, we employed one Mexican-American and one Mexican. One Mexican-American who was going to be a coach at one of our high schools, and another Mexican who you wouldn't know by name because she's now married and is Mrs. Miller and is from Mexico City. Her maiden name was Flores, is going to teach Spanish in one of our schools. We are doing more and more in this field, but they have to have the legal requirement and they have to have the... proper, in other words, they have to be certified or else we can't employ them, and when they're certified and they qualify, we do recommend them.
Carol.
Now, I'd like to make one last statement. This gentleman here talked about the PTAs. The PTAs do have an active part in all of our schools, and because of the PTA suggestion, we're having a new family life course in our 8th and 10th grades next year, and I'd like to make one more comment. Mr. Torres, who was principal of one of our junior high schools who was on this list, has a PTA, and it's my understanding, Mr. Torres, that your last few meetings, you've had two meetings. You had one in English and one in Spanish, as well as one of the senior high schools. Mr. Torres can speak for himself. Is that correct?
Well, I wouldn't want to get into all of that because I'm going to get started again. Jerry, would you add that sentence in there that will...
Mr. Rindler, if the district is having these difficulties, you keep having those qualifications, you can get qualified people and go to provisional certification.
Right.
Then give them time to meet whatever state requirements are.
They've been doing it for years.
This has been done all over.
It's a provisional credential, and you have the authority from which to do it to your school.
Well, the fact that they should American, they don't want it.
We have employed many with provisional
Mexican-American?
Yes. No, you haven't, because we're just saying that you haven't enough Mexican-American teachers in the district. One more thing. I'd like to...
I have a system of built-in red flags that go up when I hear something. I've been flying all morning. there's one that I think we better go back to. It's the little things you hear that tell volumes. It's the little statements that people make that don't seem to mean anything but tell everything. And I'm going back to something that you said, sir, when somebody asked about the meeting with the ad hoc committee, and you weren't able to answer whether you could meet with this ad hoc committee, you'd have to see. Now, what that told me was that, because if I were interested in the problem, I'd want to find out everything about it, whatever source, and afterwards determine its relevancy, not in advance. It seems to me that that means that you want to check out who wants to talk to you before you talk to them to make sure they're the ones you want to listen to. The moment you take that approach, everything you hear from whomever you do listen to will be irrelevant because it'll be designed to be comfortable and satisfy you and tell you what you want to hear so you can do what you want to do. And this lady over here a moment ago says, if you want to find out more about the ad hoc committee, ask us. You don't need to find out anything more about them except that they want to talk to you. They have something to share with you. Find out what it is. Don't worry about who they are except that they're people who are in the district who have problems in there and have something to say. Then you evaluate it after you hear it, after you learn a little about it. Education is in a bad way because we're walking in circles around the problem. We've got to take big steps and we're mincing our steps. And I suggest, if I may coin a phrase, that we get off the sneakers and put on some nine league boots.
We're going to have only a couple more comments, and I want to give next week's agenda and then dismiss Bert.
One point I wanted to make, I hope that this is not the end of the participation of the Seawater High School District in the dialogue, simply because I think the point was mentioned that this is city dialogues, but the counterpoint made was the fact that this is the dialogues are concerned about the minority groups, and the Seawater High School District has a large minority group. So I would emphasize the point that we would like the Seawater High School District to continue to participate in these dialogues.
I'm going to make that point also in a second. Last comment, and I want to end up our
question. A bit ago, somebody asked if it were true that members of the ad hoc committee had stopped going to the other committee because they'd been reduced their right to see proposals and projects. And as a member of the County Poverty Commission, I'd like to know if this is true, because I think this needs to be checked out.
That is a point that I would like to have some clarification on, too. The advisory committee was not allowed to see any projects.
And we find out who's not going to drive, and I'm going to jump off the bed.
Chairman,
that's
question.
Can he
answer?
He has a question that he can answer. All right. Granted, we are members of the advisory committee. I had some difficulty last 2 months meeting on the committee. Sat down as part of the committee. But
when you crashed it?
But nevertheless, that we, in the first meeting that we had, we would give, you know, the excerpts of the minutes and stuff like this, which is very good, very comprehensive. If you had several weeks to read it, we would get it that day, you know. And so we started to try to get more, and we were getting some of this information ahead of time. For more, I think, Mr. Dolly, you remember that I asked you to supply this information a little bit ahead of time so that we could peruse, we could evaluate. Same way with the evaluation of the total program. Verbal evaluations were made before the committee met, I mean, before I got on the committee. And I wanted to see a digested evaluation. But these type of things that, you know, the come lateness of the information the inability to really respond or to act effectively to what was being presented. I wanted to be able to sit down and talk to these people without being structure bound, you know, that we would be meeting at times that were opportunities to the majority of the people, that we could go back and relate whole community meetings and present certain types of information for their perusal, and then make definite recommendations, because, as it were, we could make recommendations, but a lot of times the proposal had already been made. The decisions had already been made, and as was pointed out at that time, that 51% or almost 50% of the committee was staff people. And a lot of community action people, but we would like, and the community action people would like to believe that we represent the community, but in 9 times out of 10, or not that many, but in many instances, we don't really represent a lot of the grassroots people. So this ad hoc committee was being formed to bring in these people who did not have the time or the means by which to get all the way down to the district. We would be mobile and be able to articulate with not only the school district, but with the people. So this is why we are forming. And we live in the district, our children are in the district, and we have resource material available to us that should be available to you.
All right. I'm going to make a suggestion about that as I end, but you wanted to add one more thing, I think, to that.
A little more. I am a member also of this committee. I am a delegate from the National City Lincoln Acres Community Action Council. I have been having difficulty in receiving reports, progress reports from this committee from the school district. Apparently, the way they were doing it is that they had their people that were in charge of these components, the teachers, reporting around the table like you are there, and they expected us, or me, to go the following year to have all this retention in my mind so I could go report to the Community Action Council, which should be done monthly, and they were not being done. I brought this to their attention, and I think as far as reports go, I was not satisfied only with hearing in the table, but I wanted a written report documented. Perhaps maybe we could also not only report this way, but we could add something to this, to the component, and not only that, and bring it to the parents, because you see, the CAC is for parents. And this is one thing that I would like to add, that the Sweetwater School District has been very there again.
One more point here on the Title I is that the Title I Advisory Committee deals with only one particular program, and we are only dealing with Title I funds. The Ad Hoc Committee would address itself to the total education picture, not Title I, not English as a second language. Many, many of the problems that don't get to the Title I table.
All right, Rico,
Mr. Chairman, just only a short one. I would like to support the last statement of Mr. Burke very much. The last statement that he made.
Which one would you remember?
One, they're returning to a high school district to the...
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, I know. Rufus, and then we'll have to end.
As the judge said, it's the little things that count. And one of the frustrations that you get when you sit in a meeting of this kind where you're talking about change, it seems to me that it's time management. Nobody knows when. It's this old deliberate, you know, but when? Now, I think that we're going to have to decide. We have the machinery for doing everything, but I think we need to establish deadlines that we're going to move at such and such a time. At least we can stop, because we go on, yes, we're going to do this, or we're going to set up this curriculum, we're going to make some change. But the thing is when, and this is where young people everywhere that can win, because we don't have old live. Like you said about the lady, you know, the time isn't on. We have to set up some dates. There will be a date when change must take place, and I think this is where we are. We talk and talk and talk and talk, but nobody really knows when there will be action.
Carol, just one moment. In putting, Dr. Hall is going to have Herbie Botta speak for that particular thing. I think that this puts a little defensiveness on both sides in having Mr. Ibarra explain that program, because if we criticize the program, it'll look like we're making a personal attack on Mr. Ibarra. I think that this should be reconsidered and thought of very carefully.
Okay. I think you have a point, and it's important that way. I'd like to meet with some of you to talk about that.
That's exactly the point. We saw it happen last time. People are brought in and they're really used. And I don't think it's fair to the people. They're caught in between. You saw the last time when they brought in those people from Morris and so on, all black people. These people are good teachers, they're dedicated, and they want to move. And so they say, come on in, we're going to have you give a report like parrots. And these guys,
they have to.
And what do you do when you attack? You're not attacking them. And they were thick enough to... because I asked him later, I said, I hope you know I wasn't attacking you personally, but it still puts them in a very bad position, and I know that for some of them it's hard for them to sleep at night when they have to be used that way to move ahead, and I think it's a sickening indictment on our whole established system, and that's exactly
when is the committee meeting next, Tuesday? Wednesday? Would you, everybody hold up just a second, please? Just a second, and we're going. Thursday?
On the
31st. All right. I made a note. I'll call something. First, you on vacation next week or the week after that?
Next week.
Next week?
No.
All right. No. Yeah, we got it in today because next week we have the other agenda. I'm a little in a dilemma here. I don't think that we have even begun here, and we know 2 weeks from today we're coming back with the San Diego School District again. Next week, the committee had agreed to look at that list of things that's been before us a long time. And next week, as you know, we agreed to put another item in there because we're trying to get this special meeting. And that next week's item is the police, I believe, San Diego.
Yeah.
I have a hunch that part of this is going to be lost if we go to that item. I have a hunch that if you can come back next week, and this is just the chair's exercise here, that it would be good if we could continue this next week, because we know the week after what, you know, the school district explained to us. Can you come back next week?
I'm going to be out of town next week.
You'll be out of town.
Is San Diego City coming back next week?
No, it's after that that they'll be back.
In other words, we've been sensitized, if I may use that word, and so on, and...
No. Are you available to come back next week then?
Yeah, I would be.
I'd like to talk to the committee about it. See you next week anyway, regardless of what we talk about.
Next week.
I know.